premiere of Brian Ferneyhough's Umbrations, which is a large-scale composition played by the joint forces of Ensemble Moderne and the Arditti Quartet, which is based on the well-known In Nomine plain chant. Plenty more besides, all at 10 tonight here on Radio 3. Now it's time for Opera on 3, which brings you a performance of Verdi's Aida, recorded earlier this year at the Salzburg Festival. It's introduced by James Nochte.
Good evening and welcome to a performance of Giuseppe Verdi's Aida, recorded at the Salzburg Festival this summer, conducted by Riccardo Muti, with a cast including Anna Netrebko as Aida, singing the role for the very first time, and tenor Francesco Melli as her lover, the warrior Radames. With me here is Dr. Flora Wilson of King's College London, and we're going to hear together with you one of Verdi's best-loved operas, first seen in Cairo in 1871, a story from ancient Egypt taken back to the pyramids for its first performance. Now, Flora, as we look forward to the opening, let's look at the background to this opera. What was the setting that Verdi was constructing this great performance for?
Well, it was actually going to be a performance to mark the opening of a brand new opera house in Cairo that was really a part of a sort of grand modernisation of Egypt for the end of the 19th century, for the modern era. And the ruler of Egypt at that time had actually commissioned Verdi to produce this opera on a scenario produced by a very famous French Egyptologist, Auguste Mariette. So already there we get a sense of the fact that there are elements of sort of Egyptian authenticity, if you like, about this, but at the same time, there's something much more politically complicated going on, that this is an Egypt thoroughly Frenchified, if you like, that it's a sort of an Egypt that's self-consciously historical.
We'll come back to that background in a moment, but just looking ahead to this performance, we're talking here about Verdi in his maturity. A couple of decades had passed since the great successes of, well, Rigoletto and La Traviata, for example, in the early 50s. So he was in complete command of his musical vocabulary by this time, wasn't
Absolutely.
he?
I mean, what's going on, interestingly, by the time we get to Aida with Verdi, is the fact that he's beginning to slow down. Those years, that those middle operas, Rigoletto, La Traviata, Trovatore, he produced those at the end of a sort of a massive rush of production, if you like. By the time we're getting to Aida, he's getting older, as you say, he's getting interested in other things, and he's gradually slowing down. He's taking longer to choose subjects, he's taking longer to produce operas, and those operas, when he produces them, are huge. They're on a much larger scale, they deal with much bigger themes.
Well, he might have been slowing down in that sense, but this opera moves at a fabulous pace.
I mean, absolutely.
Within moments of the beginning of the opera, and it's a terrifying moment for any tenor singing Radames, he has to come on and sing Celeste Aida, an aria that, you know, anyone who goes to the opera even infrequently knows very well. And it's quite a start.
Yes, you're absolutely right. It really does grab you. And that's part of a sort of a modern Verdi, if you like. He plunges his listeners straight into this opera, rather like Puccini would do some decades later. You know, it's part of a tumult. It just begins. There's no standing around, big static overtures. You're just plunged into a time and a place. And the placement of Celeste Aida, that's that really famous tenor aria, so close to the beginning. It's sort of part of this great folding of the audience into the action. It's just irresistible right from the start.
And so to the story of Aida, set in ancient Egypt, which is at war. Now, the first voice we hear is that of Ramphis, the high priest, in the royal palace at Memphis, who's sung by the bass Dmitri Beloselski, where he warns Radames, the warrior who hopes to command the Egyptian army, of an imminent Ethiopian attack. But Radames is also caught by his love for Aida, the Ethiopian slave girl who attends on the king's daughter, Amneris. Amneris, however, was sung by the mezzo Ekaterina Semenchuk, wants Radames for herself. And when the three are together, she senses for the first time that it is Aida whom he really loves and feels the awful pull of jealousy. But battle thoughts in this setting are foremost. The Ethiopians are advancing, and Radames does get his wish to command the Egyptians. Alone, Aida faces her conflict, her love of Radames and her loyalty to her father, Amenasru, now king of Ethiopia, Radames' enemy. She prays to the gods for mercy, And at the end of Act One, Radames is blessed by the priests as he prepares to go to war. And remember that you can find a full synopsis of the opera on the Radio 3 website, where you can also see some photographs of this Salzburg Festival production from August this year. Riccardo Muti conducts the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra in Act One of Aida.
Prode desto qual guerriero fossi, se il mio sogno si avverasse. Un esercito di prodi da me guidato, il plauso di me infi tutta, e a te mia dolce Aida tornar di l'auricinto, dirti per te ho pugnato, per te ho vinto.
Il grezzo ti volevo il volo.
Messager s'avanzi. Il sacro suolo dell'Egitto invaso dai barbari etiopi. I nostri campi fur devastati, parse le messi e batte della pace vittoria di predatori già marciano su Tebe.
Io soltanto
un guerriero indomabile feroce chi conduce amo l'asro
il re
già crede in armi e dalle cento porte sul barbaro invasore guerra recanto e morte.
Sì, perché morte il nostro grido, signor.
Guerra, 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 guerra!
Guerra,
guerra, guerra, guerra, guerra!
Guerra, diversa guerra!
Iside venerata, i nostre stiere invite, già disegnava il condottier supremo. Radames!
Radames!
Grazia in grazia in insomma vivo vorrai.
Or di Vulcano al tempio muovi, o guerrier, le sacre armi ti cinge alla vittoria.
Morte, morte.
The Egyptians are off to war. The end of Act One of Verdi's Aida, recorded at the Salzburg Festival in August, with Radames sung by the Italian tenor Francesco Melli, leading the Egyptians into their battle. We heard Anna Netrebko as his secret lover, the slave girl Aida. Surprisingly, perhaps her debut in this role. The mezzo Ekaterina Semenchuk is Amneris, daughter of the King of Egypt, who's sung by the bass Roberto Tagliavini. The high priest, Ramphis, is bass Dmitri Belaselski. The Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra is conducted by Riccardo Muti with the chorus of the Vienna State Opera. Listening with me is Flora Wilson. Now, as we said before the opera began, Flora, this is mature Verdi, and you feel a composer here who is at his most assured, bringing the intimacy of this tangled love conflict into the heart of a warlike atmosphere and the public sphere and the private existing happily side by side.
Well, I'm not sure that happily is necessarily quite the word, but absolutely, there's a real juxtaposition of public and private throughout this opera. And that was absolutely characteristic of French grand opera around this time, from the sort of earlier in the century through the middle of the 19th century. And that Verdi by this time had had first-hand experience of that, not only listening to it in Paris, but also producing them. So he'd turned an earlier Italian opera into Jerusalem, his first attempt. He'd then written Les Vêpres Siciliennes for the Paris Opéra, and subsequently and most recently for Aida, he'd written Don Carlos. And that sort of trajectory of those three French grand operas had been really, really important for where we find Verdi in Aida. He's been experimenting with much larger musical forms, and he's been trying out sort of different ways of setting text, influenced by the French, who were more flexible, who used a sort of mixed text setting technique, whereas Italian was much more rigid in the ways in which you could use text. And he really enjoyed experimenting with that and sort of finding new ways of making his music expressive.
The wonderful thing about this score, surely, is the way that with these great public acts of celebration and grandeur and warlike chanting of various kinds, you get a kind of sinuous intimacy, which you hear from the very beginning. The first notes you hear in the orchestra have a kind of haunting quality that draws you in. And throughout the opera, we move from, the public sphere to the most intimate, sensuous music.
Yes, you're completely right. And it's interesting, actually, that people often talk about French grand opera as a sort of proto-cinematic genre. So you get these extraordinary sort of dissolves, if you like. And Verdi really does that incredibly well in Aida. He sort of moves very smoothly from these massive public backdrops, if you like, and then sort of zooms into something really very personal and then zooms out again. So it's a really sophisticated use of musical space, if you like. You get a sense of foreground and background. And he also uses the actual stage space for that. There are, of course, on-stage musicians during this opera and off-stage musicians, as well as those actually in the pit. So you have this tremendously sort of 3D sense of sound that you get even from this recording, I think.
Well, it's been a gift to over-the-top producers down the years, you know, at Verona and elsewhere, to bring on, I don't know, elephants and camels and so on, which were not present, I should say, in this Salzburg production. But what would you say about the colour of the orchestration? Because I think anybody who comes to Aida for the first time must be struck by this gripping feeling of a world that is created by Verdi, which somehow couldn't be anywhere else. And by the time you leave the opera at the end, with the tragedy of the two lovers. You know that you've been in a very particular place, which has been delineated musically in a very particular way.
Yes, I think you're right. I mean, Verdi called that tinta, the particular kind of colour that an opera had. I would say the particular place that this opera is in is Aida. It is itself. It's not necessarily Egypt. There's a sort of, there's something very interesting going on there, that Verdi was very keen to ask for opinions, for ask for facts about ancient Egypt as he was constructing this opera. And so he was sent all sorts of information about the kind of music that might have been played in ancient Egyptian temples, and then he discarded almost all of it, and he did something different. And what he did was create a musical sense of somewhere very far away. I think that's the best we can say about this, really. It's not necessarily specifically Egypt. There's certainly nothing authentically Egyptian about this music, but what it does do is it builds on 19th century sort of musical clichés, if you like, of exotic other places. If you think of the kinds of ways that Carmen's exoticism is marked, for instance, in Bizet's opera, something similar is going on here. But if we think of, I mean, we're going to hear a little later, the opening of Act 3 of this opera, which really is stunningly orchestrated. I mean, it really is Verdi's orchestration at its absolute best.
The genius of it is that there is a place far away which we quickly realise we know very well through the music. In that sense, although this is an opera which is so well known and much loved, in a curious way, it isn't conservative in its construction. It's quite experimental, isn't it?
It is. I think it's never an either-or, and especially not with Aida. This is an opera that is both radical in certain respects and conservative in others. Verdi here is building on existing musical forms. It's not radical in the way that an opera, actually, like La Traviata, for instance, is radical in certain other musical ways. This is less radical in that respect, but in the ways in which he scores, in the way in which he's thinking about his characters, in which he's experimenting with setting his texts, and actually with staging the opera. In all of those ways, this is Verdi sort of, he is making experimental moves and sort of trying to work out what you can do on this very, very large scale with opera. So he did want to move away from these old forms. He says many times in his letters, there are some wonderful letter sources for this opera, and he says repeatedly that he wants to sort of do away with the cabalettas, and he wants to sort of, everything is going to be new and exciting. And then in practice, he's much more reticent about actually jettisoning that whole tradition.
What was the reaction in Milan when it was seen in the year after it was premiered in Egypt?
Well, it was actually much the same. I mean, people were very supportive, they were very positive, but there was an ambivalence in the press. There was this sense that Verdi sort of wanted to look forwards, but he had his foot in the past, and he was basically, for all his big talk about sort of inventing new forms and things, ultimately he wanted to hang on to his own successes, ultimately, his own musical tradition that he'd been creating in this Italian operatic school, if you like.
Yeah, the real radicalism would come with his last opera, Falstaff, which was many years ahead. Well, let's, Flora Wilson, look forward to Act 2 of Aida. Remember that you can read a more detailed synopsis of the opera on the Radio 3 website, where you can also see some photographs of this production in Salzburg in August. Now, as the act opens, Radames is about to come home. A hero, the Ethiopians have been crushed. And Aneris, the king's daughter, treats Aida cruelly, suspecting the slave girl's feelings for the conqueror. She pretends that he's been killed before she tells her the truth, and Aida's reaction confirms that she does love Radames. They watch the triumphal procession, we'll of course hear that famous Verdi march, and Radames is crowned victor. But among the captured enemies is Amenasro, who is Aida's father, who also manages to signal to her not to reveal that he is the Ethiopian king. He pleads eloquently for mercy, and Radames is moved enough to ask the Egyptian king for the prisoners' freedom. They're all freed, except for Amenasro. As his prize, Radames gets the hand of Amneris in marriage, which, of course, he doesn't want. Radames is sung by the tenor Francesco Melli and Aida by Anna Netrebko. Amneris is the mezzo Ekaterina Semenchuk, and Amenasro, king of Ethiopia and Aida's father, is the baritone Luca Salsi. The Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra is conducted in Salzburg by Riccardo Muti with the chorus of the Vienna State Opera. ¶¶
Il mistero fatal, si scuola, cioè fin. Thank you. Thank you. senti.
Almeno arra di pace securità, fra noi resti col padre Aida.
Al tuo consiglio io cedo, di securità di pace un miglior pegno io può darmi.
Enthusiastic applause in Salzburg for the end of Act 2 of Aida by Giuseppe Verdi, with the Egyptian hero Radames being promised the hand of the king's daughter Amneris as his prize for victory, to the agony of her slave Aida, who loves him as he loves her. Riccardo Muti is conducting the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra. Anna Netrebko is Aida, Francesco Melli Radames, Ekaterina Semenchuk Amneris, Luca Salsi, Amon Nasro, King of Ethiopia and Aida's father, and Dmitry Belosilsky is King of Egypt. This is a performance heard in Salzburg at the festival in August. With me listening is Dr. Flora Wilson of King's College London. The politics of the time as Verdi adapted them to the operatic stage are so obvious there. The whole idea of patriotism, fatherland, the conflicts of loyalty between individual love and love of country.
There's no question, yes, those are big themes in this opera. I think what's really fascinating about this particular opera is that actually it will be a mistake to read directly from the Risorgimento, from the political situation in Italy into this opera. I think actually a better context in which to see it is the Franco-Prussian War that was ongoing in Paris and that, more to the point, actually delayed the premiere of Aida in Cairo because the sets and the costumes and Mariette himself, that Egyptologist again, they were all stuck in Paris when the city was under siege. And Verdi was really following very closely what was going on in the city. I mean, he writes to his friend and collaborator in Paris, Camille Dulocle, who had been a librettist for Don Carlos and who was sort of involved in the libretto for Aida. And he actually wrote to him, "My heart's broken by the news from France and I wish I were not an individual, but rather government and state combined in order to do what needs to be done. But perhaps, alas, it may be impossible." So he felt himself to be invested in the situation. And this is where we see Verdi the Republican. Above all, he was stood for Republican values. And that's what's going on here, I think.
So connected with the Risorgimento at its height a quarter of a century before. In that sense, although we're talking about a very distant place, a remote atmosphere, one, as we've said, he created in the music, it was a time of war. And of course, in contemporary opera houses, there's a sense in which we're all aware of the conflicts in the Middle East, their confusions, the way that people cross country lines. And it has a kind of relevance to audiences today in a very strange way, which I don't think anybody, 50 years ago might have expected.
Well, I mean, there's no question, statistics don't lie. I think this is currently the 12th most performed opera sort of on the planet, which means there's obviously something about it that keeps people interested in the 21st century. So it really has become an incredibly popular opera. It's Verdi's second most performed opera after La Traviata and Rigoletto, which is astounding in certain respects. I think there is something clearly about that large-scale public-private clash that does appeal to us today. But beyond that, I'm not sure about relevance. I think one of the things about this opera that we have to recognise is that this is an us-and-them plot, that the Egyptians are not Egyptians. The Egyptians are Italians, insofar as they're anybody.
They always are.
Exactly. I mean, this is sort of 19th-century Orientalism at its height, if you like, that this is very much an opera about the West. It's not about the exotic other.
And fundamentally, it's a great love story.
Of course, absolutely. It's about love, it's about jealousy, it's about death. It has all those core Verdian themes in it.
And, the great Aida performances, the figure of Aida herself, if you think of somebody like Leontine Price, for example, I mean, these are among the great gems of the recorded operatic era that we can
Absolutely.
Still listen to.
Absolutely. And actually, what's fascinating about this is that Verdi said that what you need to do this opera is you need two really fantastic women. He didn't say you needed a fantastic tenor. He said you need a good tenor. So Francesco Meli can rest in peace. But you need two first-class women singers. And interestingly, Verdi thought of the roles as much more like each other vocally than they've since become. You know, we're used to an Amneris rather like Semenchuk here, who is a really sort of beefy, rich, dark-hued, exactly, one of those gutsy, dramatic mezzos. And then we're used to an Aida who is really quite contrasted to that. And I think that's where Netrebko is really interesting here. As she settles down into the performance, it's such a dramatic reading. It really does span that whole spectrum from the almost girlish at the upper end of the upper register, right the way down to real drama lower down.
Well, great drama, but also a kind of coolness, a sort of control that's quite remarkable to listen to.
The control is extraordinary. I mean, what I'd say about this performance is just that it's so varied. This is a really, she's really acting with the voice, if you like. And she's taking risks in places. It's really thrilling to listen to, actually.
Well, especially when you've got an orchestra playing like that for Muti?
They are playing extremely well. And what's sort of marked about Muti here is that there's such pace in this performance. Even the parts of this opera that you would expect that you normally hear played much more slowly, rather more luxuriantly, even they are pushed along. There's so much momentum.
We'll now hear Acts 3 and 4 together, the conclusion of the tragedy of Aida. Amneris, at the beginning of Act 3, is in the temple with the high priest Ramphis at prayer before her wedding to Radames. Aida, broken-hearted, of course, is waiting for Radames, but it's her father, Amenasro, who appears, king of Ethiopia, whose identity is still unknown to the Egyptians. He wants her to find out the Egyptians' war plans from Radames, who, when he and Aida meet and share their dreams, agrees to run away with her and abandon his planned wedding. And when she asks him, he does reveal the army's plans. And he's quite horrified when Amenasro appears and Radames realises that he is his mortal enemy. Ramphis and Amneris appear out of the temple, and father and daughter, Amenasro and Aida, get away. Radames is left to face certain punishment. He surrenders. Remember, you can read a more detailed synopsis on the Radio 3 website, where you can also see some photographs of this Salzburg Festival production, which was directed by the Iranian photographer and video artist Shireen Neshat, her first opera production. Then, at the beginning of Act 4, Radames is awaiting trial as a traitor. He also believes that Aida's dead. But when he learns that she has survived, he refuses an offer from Amneris, who says that she will get the king to save his life if he abandons Aida. The priests who try him condemn him to be buried alive. Amneris does appeal for mercy, but they reject her, and she curses them. In the last scene, Radames is entombed in a vault to die, and there he finds that Aida has hidden in the vault to share his fate. As they face death together, they express their love for each other, and above, in the temple, Amneris prays for the soul of the man she loved. The soprano Anna Netrebko is Aida, the tenor Francesco Melli, Radames, with the mezzo Ekaterina Semenchuk as Amneris and the Italian baritone Luca Salsi as Amenasro. The Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra is conducted in Salzburg by Riccardo Muti. Acts 3 and 4 of Verdi's Aida.
Thank you. distruggi per Adames, e in cama mi appendi, dei faraon la fine tua rivale, razza infame, la corrita, eroi fatale.
Oh! come speri sottrarti da neri salvezzi del re al poder del tuo popolo il voti di stati voti a lei
odi mia Ida e fiero anedito di nuova guerra il sole Dio per si destò i tuoi gempadono la nostra terra io degli Egizi duce sarò presun fra i plausi della vittoria col re mi prostro gli spero il cor sarai col servo della vittoria vivrei sarai tu il servo
ai nostri a piombar sul nemico, fia deserto fino a domani.
Quel sentiero?
Le gole di Napata.
Di Napata le gole!
Thank you.
Thank you.
perdico storo io stessa lo gettare.
Oh!
Aida and Radames die together. The end of Giuseppe Verdi's opera Aida in a performance from the Salzburg Festival, recorded in August. Riccardo Muti conducted the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra with the chorus of the Vienna State Opera House. The soprano Anna Netrebko was Aida, tenor Francesco Melli was Radames. Amneris, daughter of the King of Egypt, was sung by the mezzo Ekaterina Semenchuk. The King of Egypt was Roberto Tagliavini. Ramphis, the chief priest, bass Dimitri Beloselski. Amonasro, King of Ethiopia, Aida's father, the Italian baritone Luca Salsi. Benedetta Torri was the high priestess, and Bror Magnus Tonnes, the messenger. With me listening to that performance was Dr. Flora Wilson of King's College London, and the end of that opera is, if it's done like that, unbearably moving, isn't it?
Yes, I think it's one of the most sort of devastatingly upsetting opera endings in the repertory, if I'm completely honest. There's nothing good about this. It's a thoroughly tragic situation, and Verdi actually in that spectacular insight that he had as a sort of true man of the theatre, it was he who thought of splitting the stage in that final scene so that you have the two lovers, the two sort of winning lovers, if you like, Radames and Aida, down below, buried together, and up top you have Amneris, and they don't know she's there, and she's just as kind of devastated as they are. And having those three voices layered as they are here, as we've just heard, and with the chorus in the background, it is an astonishingly poignant ending.
As they sing with their last breaths. Netrebko's first Aida. Remarkable in a way. I mean, a singer who's conquered, you know, most of the Alpine peaks. And yet this was the first time she'd sung Aida.
It is. Well, I suppose we have to hope that she tries it again. I mean, I think this is a really... I'd certainly love to hear her do this role again. I do think that she does have that capacity to stretch from the most dramatic elements of the role right the way through to capturing something of the fact that this is a young woman, that she's vulnerable, that she's got a sort of fragility as well as that real steeliness of character.
And listening to the Vienna Philharmonic driven by Muti with that supercharged command of the score, you are in safe hands.
You are, and I mean, he manages all those transitions in this score so well, because this isn't yet through composed music. This is not a sort of Wagnerian score in that sense. There are still definitely big formal numbers. They're just much larger than ever before. And so you do need a really skilled sense of how to make those musical transitions. And Muti has it absolutely down to a T here. And it's somehow that momentum that he's built up throughout the opera until this point makes that final scene, when it finally has some time, some relaxation, if you like, altogether the wrong kind of relaxation, it makes it all the more moving that we're suddenly, it becomes static and it's just devastating.
You've talked about Orientalism earlier. No one in Cairo in 1871 or in Milan in 1872 had any idea what ancient Egypt was like. The same is true, obviously, of audiences today. And yet what Verdi did in that opera was to create a sense of place which is unmistakable. We're taken to somewhere that he has created and shaped to his own purposes. And by the end, by that devastating death for the two lovers, we feel we know it very well.
Yes, he's created an entire world in music. And I think his great achievement in this opera is that sense of real three-dimensional existence that he's sculpted in music almost. He's created an architecture where there is a foreground and a background, where these characters can come to life, where actually, as Puccini would again later in the century, these are characters who are part of the atmosphere. They are all part of a world that Verdi has created.
Flora Wilson, thank you very much indeed. We both hope you've enjoyed this performance of Aida, recorded at the Salzburg Festival in August, with Riccardo Muti conducting the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra. And now, back to the rest of the evening on Radio 3.
And that was James Naughtie. Well, next Saturday, Tom Service presents the world premiere of Nico Muhly's psychological thriller Marnie, based on the novel by Winston Graham and set in the 1950s. Sasha Cooke stars in the title role. It's conducted by Martin Brabins and it's a production from English National Opera. And you can hear that at 6:30 next Saturday here on BBC Radio 3. Well, good evening. This is Ian Skelly here guiding you through our programmes for the rest of the night tonight. And we have a little time before this week's edition of Here and Now, which comes from the Huddersfield Contemporary Music Festival. And so I have a little more music by Giuseppe Verdi, which has a strong link with Aida, a tantalising taste of what we could have had a lot more of, Verdi's chamber music. This is his string quartet in E minor, his one and only surviving chamber piece in the whole of his catalogue. It was written in 1873 during a production of Aida in Naples. It's performed here by the Brodsky Quartet.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
was Verdi's String Quartet in E minor, performed by the Brodsky Quartet. Just after 10 to 10 now, and in 10 minutes' time we're going to head for the cutting edge. Here and Now reports once more from the Huddersfield Contemporary Music Festival, which includes a number of premieres this week, not least one by Kevin Fernihoe. It's a piece called Umbrations, music based on the In Nomine Plain Chant. Here and Now is at 10 tonight. To take us there, music by a contemporary composer who made his name and became one of the greats in rock and pop. He's since turned away from performing and concentrated instead on composing classical music. This is the music of Billy Joel, perhaps channeling Liszt here. Maybe that was the intention given the title of the piece. It's A Reverie for Piano, the Villa d'Este, and it's played by Richard Jew.
Thank you.
Richard Jew played the Reverie for piano, the Villa d'Este, Opus 3, by Billy Joel.
The birth, ministry, and passion of Jesus, as seen from hell.
If opposition to a stagnant tyranny of mindless orthodoxy is evil, then I am proud to call myself evil.
David Suchet stars as Satan.
Someone get after Judas! I have to stay with the target!
What are the orders, Chief?
Well, try and get through to him! Call him off!
From the award-winning playwright Justin Butcher. Drama on 3, The Devil's Passion. Tomorrow night at 9, and then available on the BBC Radio 3 website.
Back to tonight, it's 10 o'clock. Time now for Here and Now with Sarah Moore-Peach and Robert Warby.
Here and Now has been focusing on Huddersfield Contemporary Music Festival 2017 for the last 2 weeks, with two fantastic live broadcasts sounding like this.